Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. And now, here's your host, Rick Ingram.
All right, guys, welcome back to Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers, episode 11, lucky 11. This is the one. This is the one that's going to push us up the charts. Step aside, Joe Rogan. There's a new leader in town. I plan on getting my followers to do even crazier shit. That's all part of the plan. So welcome back. We have October Ryan. Is that right?
That's correct.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, you guys. It's an honor and a pleasure.
To be in the basement of the world famous comedy store?
Absolutely, yes.
The haunted dungeon? It's exciting being down here. We were trying to get Leslie Jones to come down here for the Comedy Store podcast a couple of weeks ago, and she absolutely refuses. She's like, no, there's dead people down there. I'm like, what? So we couldn't get a Ghostbuster, but regardless, it is fun down here. So welcome. I see you're an ex-Pentecostal psych professor. Yeah. I don't even know what that means.
Sometimes I don't either. It's kind of all a blur.
That's a specific religion?
I think so. I get the details mixed up.
Yeah.
It's all very insane.
It's exciting then that they had you professing over there.
Isn't it?
They're like, do you know what you're doing? You're like, no. what did that consist of? What are you doing?
Hoy vey. So it's called the Assemblies of God.
Okay.
So it's like it's a Christian Pentecostal subsect where they usually play with snakes a lot.
I was about to ask, is this the snake religion?
Yes, it's the same religion, but we didn't do that. We were serpent adjacent.
Serpent adjacent.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. What do they do with the snakes? I never understood what it is exactly. Does that represent Satan? Is that the deal, or is it?
No, it's crazier than that.
Good.
And I've never witnessed it, so I should preface this with that. But my mom, I think, used to date a guy that ran it at his church.
Okay.
And so the whole point is that the snake, if your love for Jesus is strong enough, the snake will not bite you. If the snake bites you, you're a bad Christian.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this is almost like Salem witch trial
Very
style.
Much.
You know, if you fall, you're not a witch. Congrats, you're dead. And if you do fly, then we know you're a witch.
Yeah.
So you want the snake to not bite you.
Yes.
How often is the snake biting someone? And what kind of snakes are they using?
I think it happened more frequently than they discussed with other churches.
Right.
Because every church had their incident.
Right.
You're thinking after a few, you'd think they'd learn. But
yeah.
No.
They're like, well, the problem is that Jerry doesn't really love Christ the way that we wanted him to. I think religion in general is dangerous, but I think adding the element of snakes biting members of the community almost evens the playing field in some way.
It's more respectful, I think.
Yeah,
it's like, we're going to prove it. We're not going to take this for granted.
Yeah, I mean, anyone can say they believe in Jesus, but if you're willing to let the snake decide.
Yes.
I think that's next level commitment. That's the kind of thing I want. I want more snake religions. Whatever religion has snakes, I'm on board with that.
To be fair, my church did not do that.
They didn't do it, though.
They ran around speaking in tongues.
Oh, okay.
And, like, speaking through people, there was a lot of touching of heads and, like...
So this is, like, when the people faint or whatever?
That kind of
hijinks, if you will?
Yeah, they made my dad run laps around the hall to prove that he'd been healed from his knee injury.
What? So what was his injury?
Rocks fell on him in a coal mine.
Wow. Okay. So we have a coal miner father who had a partial cave collapse on him. And that obviously makes you wonder, you know, do you really love Jesus?
That's true.
So they made him run laps. So what does that consist? How long is he running laps?
I mean, they didn't give him instructions. It's kind of like a social thing. Like, everybody just kind of stares at you. I don't know if you've ever seen Supermarket Sweep.
Sure.
But like when they're all lined up on the sides, like with a lot of applause.
Yeah.
People kind of stare at you until you do something dramatic. So I spoke in tongues once just because I was afraid.
So did you did it on purpose, obviously, just like this will make him think, I'm experiencing something.
Well, I had to fake a lot of things with them, but
yeah.
I had to fake it out of fear because I kept going up to the altar. I don't know if you're familiar with that phrase, like the altar. Uh-huh. I thought that's like a Southern thing.
Yes.
Yeah. So we would go to the altar to pray, and people would like get touched by the Lord.
Right.
Which isn't as fun as it sounds.
Is the Lord a nickname for the priest or minister?
No priests.
No, okay.
That was one of the perks of Pentecostal, no priests.
Right. It was a pastor, a minister? Mm-hmm. Okay.
A pastor, yeah.
What does talking in tongues sound like?
I don't even know how to begin. I was listening to some like Tom Segura highlights on the way up here, and I feel like he made a reference that would have been perfect for that, but...
It's just like gibberish, right?
It is, but it's like rhythmic gibberish. Like there are certain key phrases that just get tossed in there all the time. Like shalalom popped up a lot.
Okay.
Which I think they stole from another
It's
religion.
Like Yiddish. That yeah. sounds like Yiddish yeah. gibberish, which great name for maybe a podcast, Yiddish gibberish. A fantasy football team. Yeah, I mean, I've seen, like, I guess videos online of people speaking in tongue, but it always just looks like that's a person pretending that they're doing something. And so I've heard people say they've witnessed someone who was speaking in tongues and it was real, and I immediately just go, oh, you're a fucking moron that if you believe that. But
well, they sell it. Like, they put on a show, like, someone afterwards speaks because God has told them what it all meant. So it's like a hidden message, like Legends of the Hidden Temple kind
right.
of thing.
It's almost like it's like a Book of Mormon style. I'm the only one who can translate this.
Yes.
And there's no way to prove I'm wrong.
Yeah.
So as long as you have faith, we can really sell this thing.
Yeah. Like if you were really ballsy and just waited till one happened, like you could say something afterwards and people would have thought like Jesus was speaking through you.
Wow. I got to get into this. I got to start my own speaking in tongue religion. That sounds next level in terms of the ability to con people. And in this church, do you give money?
The people
are given all their money? Yeah. I know that's generally the purpose of church, it seems like, is obviously faith, but more importantly, funding the faith.
Sure.
So someone speaks in tongue, and then someone says what they're saying is everyone should give 30% of their salary, clearly. And all right, so then what happens after that? After someone translates speaking in tongues, then what do people do? Are there people who question it?
No. And if you do, that's Satan talking to you.
Right. And so you're out. Do they kick you out, or do they just let you know, like, you need to do a better job of believing?
So every week they just bring you back and say, did you have doubts this week? Then come up to the altar and cleanse them.
Then they cleanse you. And what does that consist of?
Nothing.
Nothing.
It's just them kneeling. Like,
yeah, so you have to kneel, show that you're obeying or whatever it is.
Yeah.
All right. And so at what point did you decide, I'm not doing this. This is insanity. And you were raised this way?
I was. My parents were actually a little bit liberal among the Assemblies of God folks. Like, okay. We were allowed to dance.
Whoa. Yeah. Risque.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So they let you dance.
Mm-hmm.
And other members of the church looking down on that, like,
yeah,
things like, are a little loose over in that household.
Yeah. Well, my sister spoke her mind, which pissed everyone off.
Okay.
So
what does she say?
Really weird question. Well, one time they said, if your husband beats you, then that's on you because you should have known that before you married him.
Wow.
And my sister said, what if he didn't start beating me until after the marriage?
Great question.
And they just said, well, God wants you to be married, so yep. Stick it out.
God wants you to be beaten is really yes. what is more or less oh, yeah. what they're saying. There is a God, and he wanted you to get hit for what you said. Wow. All right, and then in terms of, I mean, is there standard religion abuse going on? Are they, you know, messing with kids? Are they abusing members of the church?
Yes, but probably not in the ways you're expecting. It's not like, it wasn't.
It's not like a Catholic right. kid diddling thing.
Yes.
This is just standard, you know, mess with people's minds.
Yeah, nothing too severe.
Now, you were a Pentecostal psych professor.
No. I was a psych professor after I said,
oh, so you left, all right, you left the church.
Yeah.
And then you became a psych professor.
Yeah.
And how much of that was delving into just dealing with the insanity that you were raised in?
100% of it was in trying to figure out what the hell was going on with me. Yeah.
So where are you a psych professor? Where were you a psych professor at?
In Panama City, Florida, the Panhandle.
Okay. Yeah, I'm familiar. I've been to Grayton Beach.
Yeah.
In that area. So what's the college there?
It was they probably don't want to be associated with me anymore. But what the hell? Gulf Coast State College.
It's Gulf a Coast great school. State College. Yeah. What's the mascot over there?
Oh shit, what were we? Gulf Coast State College. Condors, I think.
I like it. The condor.
It was a bird. I'm so sad I don't know that. I worked there 13 years.
I'm impressed actually to not get enveloped into the Gulf Coast State College folklore, if you will. What kind of students are going to that college? Is this just like is it a Christian college? Is it?
No, it was a community college.
Okay.
So it was people that didn't go to universities, but the kids were actually great. They were kind of educated and aware of things that a lot of their parents weren't.
Right.
And those are the people that made living there super fun.
The Redneck Riviera, is that?
Yes.
Is that the area?
Yeah.
If I remember correctly. I went to a lesbian wedding in Grayton Beach. And when they told us that's where they're having the wedding, I remember being like, that's a strange place to have a gay wedding. But okay. And so we went and it was great. And one of my best friends growing up was marrying her girlfriend. And so it was good to see the family and all that. And they had the wedding on the beach. And so my wife and I are sitting at the wedding getting ready to start. And they have a bunch of chairs set up. And I see this redneck dude and his family walk up just to watch the wedding or whatever. And that's the kind of thing that catches my eye because I'm just like, oh, this could be tremendously fun to watch this guy's reaction. And so he's like gathering his family together and, you know, he's got the sleeveless shirt on, just horribly sunburned, everything you want out of a redneck. And he watches the first bride walk down the aisle and they're just kind of standing there watching. And then I start nudging my wife. I'm like, get ready for this. And she's like, what? And I'm like, he's going to be surprised. And then the second bride star walking down and you just see flustering, like trying to gather his kid up so that he's like, let's go, come on. And then they're just trying to escape as quickly as possible. I'm like, it was, everything was worth it. Flight delays, all of it worth it just to watch that guy. He's convinced he's going to show his family this beautiful ceremony and then it's just panic. But yeah, it's an interesting area for sure.
Mm.
It's like a weird combination of like people who are, you know, upper middle class maybe. And then some real Alabama trash, I guess is maybe the, I don't know. If there's any Alabama trash watching or listening to this, it's you that I was just talking about. And so you did that 13 years, you said.
Yes.
How do you get a job at a place like that? What was the goal? Did you study psych?
Yeah, so I studied psych to figure myself out. It really wasn't working. So
you said time to profess.
Yeah, there has to be something else out there. So I dropped out of my PhD program, and which means you can only teach at a community college. You can't teach at like a university.
Got it.
So my parents vacationed there when I was a kid, so I'd been to that little place, you know, when I was 8, 9, 10, 11. But you want very different things at 8, 9, 10, and 11 than you do.
Sure.
When you're an adult.
Yeah. All right. And then you moved to L.A.?
3 years ago.
3 years ago. Mm-hmm. What made you decide to move to L.A.?
I met a friend out here, and I went to visit him. And we went to It was a Pink concert.
It was a Pink concert,
yeah. And he was like, so tell me what's going on with your life. And I told him, and he was like, why the hell are you still there? Like,
yeah.
Everyone tells you all the time to get out. Like, why haven't you listened? So he let me stay out here for a week and find a job. And yeah.
And now you're in LA.
And now I'm in L.A. I tried living in Santa Clarita for a year, but that was
north of L.A.
Me. Yes.
Yeah. It's kind of, I don't want to say rural because it's not really rural, but it's definitely more conservative.
Yeah.
The type of people, the ones I've met anyway up there, I'm like, it might as well be in Kansas where I'm from because that's the same kind of mentality they had. Where I'm just like, I don't think I like it up here at all. This is supposed to be California. Let's see. All right. So you started transitioning.
Yes.
While you were out here.
Yes.
During the pandemic.
Yeah.
All right. So take me through that. What made you finally decide that was what you wanted to do? And was it because of your background, like religiously? Is that why it took so long, you think?
Yeah, to a lot of that. Like, I think it was June or July, and I really got into, I've always been a RuPaul's Drag Race fan.
So
I was starting in the last few years to become familiar with gender diversity.
Right.
In like a real way.
Probably not a lot of that encouraged in Florida or the Pentecostal.
No. When they were talking about unisex bathrooms a few years ago, I brought up, we should talk about that, you know, for our kids. And someone literally said this to me. It was an employee. Like, we don't have transgender people here.
I was like, wow.
Well, you do. They're just too terrified to fucking tell you.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
It's the problem here is you guys, not that we don't have any.
Yeah. Yeah. But so I started questioning it. And actually, it was around Black Lives Matter. I was talking to a friend of mine, and he was really telling me about all of his problems with like systemic racism and things he'd always felt, but never even felt like he could talk to, like with us, his closest friends.
Right.
And so we talked for a couple hours just about how he was feeling. And I was doing drag at that point, with air quotes, because I had no idea what the fuck I was doing.
What does early drag consist of when you're getting
Christ.
Into it?
Well, you don't know anything. I still don't know anything. But it's just basically you put a wig on.
Okay.
And then put like Miss Piggy amounts of rouge on your cheeks.
Sure.
And that's Piggy. It, really. Yeah.
Were there fake eyelashes involved?
That was too advanced. That's still too
advanced. That's next level.
For me. I can't.
Okay.
You
know. Wow. Okay. So I honestly don't know. Is that a traditional stepping stone, if you will, to transitioning? Is just doing drag?
Yeah, from what I hear from a lot of people, I was like a super girly little kid, like super fucking girly.
Okay.
And like memories I'm just now remembering, like of being, you know, like punished for saying and doing things.
Right.
Like I had repressed all that. So I don't know. It's just, it's hard to talk about the repressed memories and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, I even forgot what you asked me.
Oh, it's all good.
It throws me sometimes, yeah.
Well, part of why I asked was I know a comic from here who's been transitioning for the last, I guess started right around the beginning of the pandemic as well.
Yeah.
And I talked to him a couple years ago, and he was saying that he did drag in college. Yeah. And that he was just really into it. And he's also she's from North Dakota. And, but just said, you know, loved doing the drag thing before she realized that it was more than just dressing up for a drag contest.
Yeah.
But it had never occurred to me that there would be, I guess, crossover between the two groups.
Yeah. For me, it was definitely a stepping stone. RuPaul always says you find out who you really are when you're in drag for the first time. She says that of girls and guys.
Yeah.
And I dressed up. This was like 15 years ago. My gay friends and I just did drag in my apartment like one weekend, but we kept it a secret. We made like a blood oath that no one would take pictures.
Right.
And it was like a very shameful thing.
Did it feel good though when you're doing it?
It felt so good that I was like, I can't do that again.
Right.
Because
that's
it cracked something. And,
yeah. Yeah. I did heroin once and now I want to do it every moment.
Yeah. Imagine that's very similar.
Yeah. Okay. So you and your friend, and this is in Florida?
Yeah. So this was maybe, like I said, 10, 12, 15 years ago. So I never like did it again, like didn't think about it. It never crossed my mind until I had nothing to do in the pandemic, but, you know, sit in my thoughts.
Right.
And so I wasn't going into work and like gender performing. Like I had lived my life like I would always present like as the dutiest dude that ever duded.
Sure.
So like, ugh, God, that feels so gross.
What kind of manly things are we talking about? just getting online and bullying people.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that sort of thing. Lots of crotch grabbing. And
nice.
Watched a lot of Tim Allen comics.
Yeah. Amen. I think just defining the dutiest thing that a dude can do is watching Tim Allen is exactly what I think most alpha dudes, if you will, consider. Like, I make fun of it on stage sometimes. Well, I'll be making fun of a bro, if you will, and then I'll go, "What? You know, did you think you're going to the Laugh Factory? You wanted to go see Tim Allen?" And then I make fun of it, and then the crowd will laugh, but you'll see the one guy just like, "Wait, is Tim Allen playing down the street? Is that, am I missing Tim Allen right now to get made fun of by the school shooter looking guy?" All right, so then the pandemic starts.
Yeah.
You're living in LA. Are you in Santa Clarita at that point?
I had just left. I lived in West Hollywood the first year.
Okay.
And so I had just left to move to Santa Clarita when the pandemic happened.
Okay.
So I wasn't performing for anyone, so I would, you know, start wearing looser shirts around the house, like,
sure,
which is like baby such a steps, bold step. and playing with my wigs more and just kind of like leaving them on during the day. I was telling somebody this morning. It's I had always thought before I realized I was trans that it's something that each like, oh, I want to wear a dress, like I want to wear a wig and do all these things. But that's not what it is, at least for me. This makes me feel more comfortable than I felt my entire life.
Right.
And it brings back a lot of like really old young memories and like, oh yeah, like I did constantly bother my sister and my female cousin because they wouldn't play with me.
Right.
Like, so many things come back and you're like, now I remember moments where I was like, who I am is not okay. So push this as far down as you fucking can.
Yeah. Be what everyone else wants you to be, basically.
Yeah, that's how I lived my whole life. Like, I was the people pleaser.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, are your parents still alive?
Yes.
They are. And what do they think? Are they still religious?
They are. We left the Pentecostals, like, my senior year of high school. So they're less, like, crazy religious.
Right.
But, you know, they grew up in the mountains of Virginia.
Appalachia.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's hard because my dad had said to me that he like it disgusted him when he saw me in drag. And that was like a super hard thing to hear, like when I was just starting to get comfortable with it.
Yeah, because obviously you want your parents to love you unconditionally and
Yeah. So we haven't talked in a long time.
Right.
My mom has reached out. She's tried to understand. I think she fears like hurting me, like so she doesn't want to ask questions or have like deep conversations, which I'm fine with. I'm like, let's just talk about the Real Housewives all day. Like that's fine right. with me. You know,
no but, reason to take shots from someone if that's basically what they're gonna do.
Yeah, yeah. So it's hard, but my mom is working at it. And my dad may be too. He just may be doing it in his own way that
right.
I don't know of yet.
He's trying to manly do his man thing.
I would imagine he's remembering how he duded me up.
Yeah. I trained her to be a man. What is going yeah. on?
No, they tried everything. Like, I wasn't even allowed to be in the band because they thought that might make me gay. They thought that was worst case scenario at that point.
This is the one thing that I think they were on point with. A lot of their thoughts are backwards, but
that one they got right.
Marching band. That's a whole different level. And if my kids end up being in marching band, that's where I draw the line. I guess it's a strange thing when obviously they raised you in that environment. You know, it's going to be harder for them to open their minds to, you know, accepting anything. Most of the religious people I knew growing up were not accepting of my existence based solely on the fact that I was like, you know, a 14-year-old atheist.
Oh, yeah.
And so like, even that, it's like, I was kind of normal, I guess, in terms of most things, but, you know, I didn't go to church camp with the other kids I grew up with and that kind of thing. It was like, you can't invite him over. I'm not allowed to go over to their house. And so, I mean, it's hard for me to say that it's easy to understand people's closed-mindedness, but at the same time, I just know people are set in their ways for the most part.
And that stuff's powerful. Like, it was so powerful, I repressed it myself, you know? So it's going to affect them, too.
And now, were you openly gay before?
Yeah, I lived as a gay man from 25 to 39.
Okay.
40.
And then what did they think about that? Was that also not acceptable, or did they not know?
Hated it at first. They drove. I called them from Virginia Tech, where I was going to school, and they were surprisingly cool about it at first. And I was like, something's wrong.
Yeah,
this is too good to be true.
Yeah.
And sure enough, like 4 hours later, they had driven to my door with VHS tapes on how to cure me through prayer.
Wow.
Which were fucking hilarious.
I mean, yeah, that's amazing for a lot of reasons. One, that they had VHS tapes. Like they were planning, like, listen, when it happens, we're going to have the tapes ready.
That never occurred to me. Now I'm questioning.
Yeah, like where did you get them? And why is this taped over designing women? This seems like a strange combo. Yeah. And so what did they sit you down then and they made you watch these tapes with them?
Yeah, my mom is just crying on the recliner and my dad is like, just please for her. So I watched it and literally it was two of the most flamboyant guys I've seen in my entire life, like talking about how not gay they are. Yeah, and you know,
you got to understand, pussy is amazing. You're like, wait a minute. I can't remember. Some comic used to do a bit about, maybe it was Jeff Richards, about clearly gay guys who are in denial about it. They're like, oh, I just want to suck those titties. But it's, yeah, I mean, so, and you said there's four of these VHS tapes?
Oh, no. We only watched one. I hope to God there's not more than that.
Okay, so you watched the VHS tape, and then, so when it ends, are they looking at you like, cured? Are you cured? Do you want to go to the titty club and experience the new you?
No. They did the whole like staring at me thing. But then it's funny you say that because my mom did. My mom was so afraid I was going to get a girl pregnant like my whole life.
Really?
Secretly, I'm like, you have nothing to worry about in so many ways. So she was always worried about that. But like, I knew like deep down where all this was going. Like,
right.
There was no question for me.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you said you have one sister?
Yes, older sister.
Older sister. And how does she take it?
She was actually supportive.
Yeah.
We don't talk a lot. We're not close. But if someone says something transphobic on Facebook, she'll like bitch them out.
Nice.
So that's very nice.
Yeah, yeah. That's at some level at least of, you know, as humans, maybe you guys don't get along, but it's nice that she's supportive in some way.
Yeah, 100%.
And so then out here, is there a trans community that, you know, support each other, or is it just kind of, you know, every man, woman for themselves?
I'm sure there is a community. I hear there's one.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I reached out through COVID,
right,
like there was nothing was happening. This was like only a few months in. So I think people were just now figuring out Zoom was going to like rule the world for the next decade.
Sure.
So, yeah, like, oof.
Do you think it starting to transition during COVID, was that beneficial that was going on, that you weren't having to be around people that you were?
Yes and no, because I was really upset a lot of the time. And I don't know that I would have figured it out had I not gotten the chance to not be around people. Like I lived alone with my dog. So, you know, for the first time in my life, there would be weeks when I didn't have to perform for anyone.
Right.
So I think it's good in that way, but not having a community, and I'm like super fucking shy anyway, like,
yeah,
you know, I could perform really well in like my previous life, but now that I'm trying to just be authentic, it's like not easy for me.
Sure.
So I don't know. It's a yes and a no, like a blessing and a curse. Sometimes I'm like, would I have been happier if I just, you know, never figured it out? And I'm sure my parents would have, like, appreciated me waiting until they died or something.
why didn't you wait until I die? Like, oh, I could kill you, I guess.
Yeah, but the difference is now, like, it's like a door was open that I can't close.
Sure.
So it's like, you know, sometimes I want to, but most of the time it's like...
You are who you are.
I am who I am.
This is who you are, yeah.
Yeah.
And so what? How does the dating scene work? Is that even something you've delved into, or...
I've always sucked at dating. Like,
yeah.
I'm terrible at it. Hopefully it was because I was trying to be somebody else.
Right.
That's like the one thing that's different now. Well, there's a lot of stuff that's different now, but... But yeah, I'm not good at that stuff. I try like the apps, like Grindr, but I'm not what most people are looking for on there.
Okay.
That's
Tinder for gay people.
Yeah, correct? It's where gay guys go to like immediately hook up.
Right.
Yeah, that's where they
it's
say
a fuck
hello
app.
With, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then when you're on Tinder, do you have to say that you're trans, or how does that work?
Well, on Grindr, you don't have to. I haven't done Tinder.
Oh yeah. Grindr.
Yeah. But Grindr, it's kind of obvious because it's like 99% gay men. And what I've noticed in like West Hollywood is they're all chiseled within an inch of their life.
Right.
And like look right out of Abercrombie ads.
Yeah.
And then there's me and my little, you know,
right.
This is my hair now, but I wore a wig for a bit. So I don't really have to say it. They're like, oh, well, good for her.
Right.
But nobody wants to fuck me. So, like, thanks and no thanks,
yeah.
I guess.
I mean, I can relate to that general feeling. I spent most of my life going, wait, no one wants to fuck me? What the fuck is going on? How did this happen? Oh, right, that's what I look like. Okay, well, let me see if I missed... Do you consider yourself a redneck?
Yes and no. I fought it for the longest time, but now I'm kind of like re-embracing it again.
You
I
know.
Started listening to Shania Twain and Faith Hill openly again.
Oh,
yeah.
Finally.
I went through a phase where
you're coming
like,
out,
yeah.
Coming out of the country music, diva closet.
Yeah.
All right. That's interesting. Well, we're going to, take a break real quick, and I'm going to bring Sarah in, and she's going to ask some more questions, stuff that I missed. Things that she obviously is a more organized brain to bring it all together. But thank you. We'll be right back.
Thanks.
Say hi.
All right, guys, we're back. Sarah's here.
I'm here.
She's fresh off of World Series victory.
I know. That's why I was like very excited to have a fellow Southerner join us.
Yes,
girl. Yeah. So where are you from originally?
So I was born in Baptist Valley, Virginia.
Baptist Valley?
Yeah. Which
that sounds...
It's not a valley, and there are no Baptists there, so it's like the stupidest name ever.
There probably was Baptists, and then they were
They all
murdered.
Died from snake bites.
Yeah, that's very possible. Water moccasins took care of that little problem. Jesus didn't love any of them.
Okay, so you were born in Baptist Valley, and then what?
Then went to Averett University in North Carolina, small town, for my undergrad, and then Virginia Tech for grad, and then Florida for way too long, and then here.
And then here.
Yeah.
And that's fun. And then is, so you said you're getting back into the redneck stuff, but I am very excited, which, by the way, like... Is telling people that you like country music harder than telling people that you've been transitioning?
100%. 100%.
In this town, it has to be harder to tell.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I heard Tom Segura like makes fun of Garth Brooks all the time. I know he does.
Yeah.
I liked Garth Brooks.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. But people also say Tom looks like Garth Brooks. So I think that's also part of the.
That could be.
That's true.
Yeah. But Dolly Parton is like. You know.
Does she count as country? I feel like she's just Americana.
Well, she's been embraced by everyone because she's so fucking cool. But she grew up in a one-bedroom house with 13 kids in the mountains of...
That counts as country. No matter what she does, that's country.
She keeps Dollywood open just to pay the employees. Like, she loses money off of it.
It's a terrible plan.
Yeah.
Dolly, I don't know if you're listening, but... She's not.
Well, I was when we're talking about country music and drag, and like Dolly famously like goes as herself sometimes at drag shows.
Hilarious.
And then she's lost them before, like to Dolly Parton drag shows. So
that's
I always find that to be very cool. When you considered that you used to be a redneck, like what did that entail?
So I secretly loved Shania Twain and Faith Hill. This is when I was like a teenager, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I would listen to their music. I would go in my sister's like bubblegum pink bedroom and like play with her lace like curtains. And I was like fucking 14. I wasn't like six. That was probably.
But growing up, did your family go hunting or like were you into did you have to do any all that,
to do that
like
stuff?
Forced boy country stuff?
I was 100% forced to go hunting. The only thing I ever killed was a squirrel, and they made me hold it up by its tail and so they could take a picture. And I'm like fucking like miserable, like dying inside.
I shot a poor tiny little animal.
Yeah, he was
with
so
an AK-47. No, I'm just kidding.
It was an anti-aircraft gun, and it was just a tail. That was all that was left. I still have family members and lots of people I grew up with who are constantly posting photos online of them and the things that they murdered. And it's always weird where I'm just like, this is so strange. Or they'll stack up like 25 pheasants. I'm just like, what are you doing with all that? You can't even eat that much pheasant.
No.
We had heads around our entire house.
Is that right?
Yeah.
The taxidermied
like
animal heads?
Multiple deer, a boar that was burned in a house fire, but they managed to salvage half of it.
Nice.
So it's this terrifying, like, burned boar head.
See, now I'm on board with that. I mean, that's something that if anyone breaks into your home and they look over and see the partially burned boar's head, they go, we got to get the fuck out of here.
Oh, yeah.
This isn't worth stealing.
Yeah, my brother-in-law kills a lot of deer. So whenever I stay at their house, I make him take them down before I won't sleep in the room with them.
Good
he
for
puts
you.
Them in the garage.
Nice.
Yeah, they're terrifying. They just stare at you
weird.
All night.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want a dead animal staring at me.
And there's like guilt, like you could have done something to stop this, you know?
Yeah.
I worked in at this resort in Colorado after my freshman year of college, and I worked in a snack bar, and there was just this giant elk and a giant moose heads right across the way that just stared at you. And then they just had this plaque with this long story about how this was the elk that lived in the area for 40 years. I'm just like, so why did you murder it and stack its head on the wall?
Yeah.
But people would come in and be like, oh, it's so great to see whatever the stupid name was again. I'd be like, really? It feels good to come back and see the dead moose head? People are weird.
People are weird.
Yeah.
Are you still friends with anyone from your childhood growing up?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. My best girlfriend, she and I are still close. Like, we talk once a week. And then my best guy friend, who was like frat boy, super cool, like God only knows why he befriended me. Mm-hmm. He's like super sweet, like sends me like love you texts all the time, which is like a big deal for people from the South.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Guys.
Yeah.
And they're actually in the book that I wrote. It's kind of like my journey-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're my two partners in crime. The two characters are inspired by them.
Right. So I want to talk more about your book because you said you wrote this over the pandemic as well, right?
Yeah. I had no intention of writing a book.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of got bored one day. And I write music kind of in my spare time. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, I'll just write like non-lyrical stories. And like I sat down and started writing about it, and it just like kept going. And it was a way for me to like safely talk about my traumas because it was a fictional character.
Sure.
But I was in control of everything that she was saying and doing.
Right.
So that's actually how I got my name. I was going to go by Olivia until I finished the book. And just the way the book is written, like spoiler, the big alert, the big reveal at the end is that the character's name is October.
Mm-hmm.
And someone figures that out. And in describing what that name meant to her, I realized I was talking about me. So I decided to just go by October. So,
love that.
Yeah, that's it was cool. Great. Yeah.
And what is, do you want to tell us what the book is about, or we can just promote it? You don't have to say anything else about it.
No, I love talking about it. It's so fun. It's inspired by a dream I had when I was on edibles.
Hell yeah. Okay.
I'm listening.
But I'd gone to a gym, to our high school gym with my two best friends. And they had kind of rigged it so I got to be a cheerleader, which secretly I always wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And no way in hell could I ever admit that.
Yeah.
And it was like the best fucking dream ever. And I was like, I might do something with that. And so that was like going to be the storyline of the book. It wasn't very fleshed out. It's like,
yeah.
Three people go into a gym and one of them cheers.
One the of them end. Goes to so many people can relate, though.
Right, right. Yeah, but it just went from there into what I wanted to say about growing up transgender in a conservative environment. And also what I want to say about the future I want to live in, where like it doesn't, none of that matters. Like people just don't care about your gender or your race. Like we're all kind of viewed exactly the same. I know we're not now.
Yeah.
But you know, like that's like the utopia.
An ideal, yeah.
Yeah. So it's a lot of wish fulfillment. It's a lot of truth about me. It's exaggerated. My mom actually read it and she called me and she was like, you're not dying, are you? I was like, no. She was like, well, you said some of this was true. I was like, yes, some being the operative word.
Yeah, not that part, mom.
Yeah, but it got us to talk, so.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah, I guess.
Who was the first person that you came out as gay to, and who was the first person you came out as trans to?
First two people I came out as gay to were two other colleagues of mine in the grad school at Virginia Tech. This super chill, laid-back guy named Doug, and this super sweet girl named Sarah. And just like over the course of several weeks, I had listened to them say things vocally about being supportive for gay people. Which in Blacksburg, Virginia, like you don't get cred for that. Right. That's how you lose all of your friends immediately.
Yeah, you're saying that because you believe in it, not because you're like, these people are going to accept me as woke if I say this.
Yeah, exactly.
So you came out to them?
Yeah, I came out to them as gay. And like we went to, oh shit, what was the name of that restaurant? It was like a Chili's.
Nice.
And I just sat there and I had texted them. I was like, did you guys want to have a good night? And they were like, what the fuck do you mean?
Yeah.
And I was like, because I'd like to hang out, but you're not going to have a good night if you hang out with me. And they're like, what the fuck does that mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's lost his mind.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Suspicious.
So we go there and I just start crying. And for like 20 minutes, I'm crying. I can't get any words out. So Doug had figured it out. So he was just kind of like laying back going, I'm going to make you say it. Like, yeah. You need to say this. Mm-hmm. But Sarah was like having a panic attack. And when I said, I'm gay, she went, thank fucking God. I thought you had cancer. Like,
yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
She's like, I don't care if you're fucking gay. So that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then trans, I actually called, one of the friends I work with here in LA. And she'd been super supportive of me like in the 3 years I'd been here. So I called her and thanked her for that. It's like, P.S., I'm trans now. Thanks. It's your fault.
Your support made me feel comfortable being me.
Yeah, 100%.
Wow. I think that's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine the pressure it takes to tell, like, to reveal something that is a secret. Is it hard when people are like, it's fine, and, like, they don't react and go, oh, my God, wow. Like, well, okay, I'm shocked. Or, like, is it harder that they maybe already knew and it was a bigger deal to you?
Well, nobody has admitted to already knowing. Mm-hmm. Because even when I was living as a gay person, I was one of those obnoxious, like a mask for mask gays where mm-hmm. like anything feminine is gross. Like I'm not
okay.
that, you
yeah.
know? So that was kind of a thing. And
I didn't realize until maybe like 10 years ago that there was, I guess I just assumed unknowingly that gay people were supportive of trans people.
Yeah.
And it's not the case.
Sometimes yeah,
it is, obviously.
Yeah.
But like I remember talking to a gay person here, and they were saying something negative about trans people, and I was like, wait, I didn't realize that was a thing. It just seemed like, and again, it's because I'm coming from Kansas where I grew up, to where sure. It was like anyone who's different at all is evil and bad. So
yeah,
it seemed like they would understand, but.
Well, there's a lot of racism in the LGBTQIA community. Like,
yeah.
There's the old classic, like, no femmes, no fats, no Asians. Like, that was a whole thing that you'd introduce yourself with on Grindr.
Really?
Yeah. So there's a lot of, like, I think self-hatred and then, like, projection onto people who are, like, I'm more comfortable now than I've ever been.
Right.
And I think someone struggling, understandably, would be like, fuck you. Like, it's not okay that you do that.
Right.
Because I felt that way. Like, mm-hmm. I would say that drag queens were my heroes because of the courage I knew it would take to do that.
Sure.
Didn't fucking know I was one yet.
Right.
But, yeah.
Is there a goal? Like, is there a place that where, like, what is your goal? Is there a goal? I don't want to be naive and think, like, this is it. You're good. Like,
yeah. No, I want to be Taylor Swift. Like, that's my goal. Like, I want to look like her. I want to write like her. I adore Taylor Swift. But yeah, like, I'm talking, I've been on hormones for 10 months, mm-hmm. And have some upcoming appointments with, like, surgeons. It's all very, like, overwhelming. Like, you just,
yeah.
I never even thought about how much it would take, to physically transform. Like, just getting to look like this, takes me a pretty long time. But, like, one day I hope to just be October. Mm-hmm. And, like, yes, I'm transgender and I'm proud of it, but it's, like, the subtext in, like, people getting to know who I am. Because that's exciting. Like, I've never felt like people, like, even my best friends have known who I was. So, like, just stuff like this, it's like, God, like, this is so freeing. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
I just love talking about it now.
I think it's, obviously, like, there's got to be so much work involved, not just in the physical aspect, but in the mental aspect. Like, when you're just talking about, like, reliving some of those moments where you realize you were repressing yourself, like, it seems like it would take quite a bit of unwinding that string of, like being comfortable with who you always were, as opposed to,
yeah.
like, it's
lying to yourself for so long.
Yeah, sure.
Mm. Yeah.
There's some heavy shit, like, in my dreams. Like, I started having, like, hella bad nightmares, like, Saw level, like, my parents are peeling the skin off of me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of nightmares. And then you wake up from that, and, it's like, you've had dreams where you're pissed at your partner and you wake up angry at them, like, mm-hmm. in real life. So, like, you wake up from a dream where your parents are skinning you alive, and you don't just go, oh, well, I'll just have a coffee now and it'll be fine, So I'm like going through some deep thoughts and stuff, but as hard as it is, it's still so much fucking better than pretending to be something that I wasn't.
Yes. Yeah. So. And then what's the name of the book that you wrote?
The Beginning of October.
Love it.
Nice.
Okay. And it's
I'm
a
witty.
Fiction. You said it's a fiction.
It's a good, like, play. I like that.
Yeah.
Like, based on a true story, but, like, fiction.
Yeah, inspired by my life story. But I am not dying.
Okay, good.
Yes.
In case your mom is watching.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And then do you continue to write now? Are you, like, is that what your goal is as well, like, professionally?
Yeah, I'm doing more songwriting. I've got another idea for the sequel for the book. I've gotten some positive feedback. I've actually started writing, like, more comedic stuff, just because, like, the last 3 years I have fallen in love with stand-up comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you guys and Segura and Bergazzi, like, all those people.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, in my whole life I was taught, it's like, uneducated people and then educated people. And now I'm like, uneducated people, educated people, comics who are willing to say true things.
Enlightened people, yeah.
Yeah, and like, you realize things in other people that we don't see in ourselves. Like, that's how you get us to laugh. Like, if you tell me something I know, like, big fucking deal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird. Like, comics became my life role models very quickly.
There's a level of philosophy to comedy that, yeah, I think a lot of people don't understand. And not every comedian, obviously. And like you said, like, people who tell you things you already know. Like, there's a whole division of comedy where it's people... kind of the Tim Allen style of comedian, where they're saying things that people have thought of.
Yeah.
And I remember when I started doing comedy, like, hearing comics just telling jokes and doing really well and just being like, every person on the planet's thought of that. Like, they're telling jokes about how dirty gas station bathrooms are. I'm just like, what? This isn't funny. But people are laughing, and I've literally heard people go, man, I've thought of that. And I'm just like, this is the comedy I hate the most. But I like when people make you think about things.
Yeah, I think so. I think that there's a... I think when comedians are really good, it looks effortless. But I think what makes it effortless is when you're brutally honest about who you are. And I think that's what you are probably seeing in a lot of the comics that you love. Is like, I feel like as a comedian, I was pretty good for about 10 years. And around the 10-year mark, I started being extremely honest about who I was. I stopped acting like the girl that was having sex all the time and doing sex jokes, because I'm like, I'm not doing that. I don't know why I'm talking, because it's like the audience can tell when you're lying.
Yeah.
And so as soon as I started being honest about what was really happening, all of a sudden I was getting bigger laughs, you know, because I believed what I was saying.
Yeah.
And I think it's inspiring to see someone like yourself as well go through that, like start realizing that about yourself too. It's like you, when you start believing in
accepting your truth, accepting your own truth, yeah,
and being okay with like your
the repercussions of it,
yes, yeah, the good and the bad, people are much more accepting because they know that you're telling the truth. Yeah. I guess is what my whole point was. Yeah. That's all I have. This was wonderful.
Yeah,
this is a really lovely conversation. And it's called The Beginning of October.
Yes.
Where can people find the book?
So locally, it's at Book Soup.
Cool.
Yeah, that was cool. It's like the first bookstore I went to when I came to LA. Mm-hmm. It's also at, oh gosh, I'm blanking on the name right now, Brave New World Comics, my friend Andy's shop. And then it also just got picked up by Circus of Books, which is like a big deal for me. Yeah,
nice, very cool.
And then it's on Amazon too. I've had people like, "Do you have it elsewhere on Amazon?" I'm like, "Can you just drop $15 and support your cousin?" Like,
yeah,
like I get it, but come on. But it's on my website too. So.
Okay, is there anything else that you would like to promote?
No, just.
Social media.
So,
well, yeah, I'm trying to get away from all that shit.
Good. Like, good for you.
Healthy.
Yeah, like my friends got me to download TikTok. I don't know how I feel about that decision just yet. But like Instagram's really the only thing I have. But October Ryan Rises, and then my website is just octoberryan.com, which has all my socials.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you guys.
We have a live show that we're doing December 8th.
Yes, another live show.
So
where Rick really feeds off the crowd and attacks everyone.
I get way meaner when there's people laughing. So if you're looking to see me bully people, this is going to be the opportunity.
Yeah, so if you would like to come to that show, you can buy tickets at the Comedy Store's website pretty soon. I don't know if it should be available within like 2 weeks before the show. We're just letting you guys know. So again, anybody in the crowd can get chosen out of a hat to come up on stage and be interviewed. And you never know what celebrity stranger is going to show up and surprise.
I hope
Rick.
It's Urkel. I'm putting it out there. I'm putting it out
to
the
you
world.
You would know him.
I would know.
Last time I had to bring somebody that I was like, I'm sure you'll know who he is once you figure it out.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't know Ryan Leaf by sight.
True. But with that being said, Urkel, Jaleel White, I should probably not refer to him as Urkel, is a stranger. So we never
stranger?
Know. I wish.
What if we get Balky?
If we got Balky, I'd be more than excited, and I would have to retire from entertainment forever after that.
All right.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it. Thank you for being here, October. We appreciate you being a guest, and thanks for listening, guys.
If you'd like to be a guest on our show, please DM Ingram Pod on Twitter. That's Ingraham Pod on Twitter.
Goodbye to everyday people.
Special thanks to the Comedy Store and to Brian Rips for the dope-ass music.